This time the basic thrust was to be epistemic rather than metaphysical. Cybernetics would again be defined by a feedback, but now it was between a system and its observer, rather than merely being within the system being observed. What made this radical was that the observer was part of the system being observed. And this is also what made it epistemic rather than metaphysical. Observation was the central concern. The movement to second-order cybernetics was led by Heinz von Forster. Though he had served as the editor of the original Macy conferences, he was still a generation younger than all of the other participants. Indeed, it was not until 1958 that he was allowed to run his own lab dedicated to cybernetics research, the Biological Computer Lab at the University of Illinois. We can see in this history of this lab the rise and fall of second-order cybernetics, and perhaps also a metaphor for cybernetics itself. This is one of the machines they built. This was an electronic ear from the early 60s. This is one of their electronic brains from 1959 called the Adaptive Reorganizing Automaton. And those are both analog computers. As a physicist, von Forster was captivated by the advances in atomic physics, and in particular the uncertainty principle. What intrigued him about this was that the observer was inherently part of the system being observed. It was not possible to measure the position and spin of an electron without disturbing the system in such a way that one of these bits of information was lost. In subsequent investigations into the nature of time and observation, von Forster convinced himself that this relation held for all systems and therefore all scientific knowledge. This insight held several implications, most notably ethical and aesthetic ones, about how one chooses a system and how to treat a system under observation and to always explicitly consider the role of the observer. That the BCL was the birthplace of second-order cybernetics is also borne out by the fact that the other major figures in the area were all early visitors and frequent guests. And the first visitor was the young Gordon Pask, who came to the BCL to grow ears and neurons in electrolyzed chemical solutions. He was soon followed by Stafford Beer, who would later go on to reorganize the Chilean economy around a cybernetic vision with a centralized computer, all under the direction of Allende, at least until a CIA-supported coup put an end to it all. Two other young Chilean cyberneticians were also brought to the BCL to escape the reprisals of Pinochet, Umberto Maturana and Francisco Varela. Heinz von Forster himself worked to help them escape the country and arranged for visiting positions for them at the BCL. While they were there, they completed and published their notorious tract on autopoiesis, the power of a self-organizing system to bring itself into existence. It stood at once as a theory of how life could come into being and how a mind could become conscious. In each case, the essential thing was reflexivity, that the observer observed itself, and observed itself, observing itself, and so forth. This idea became central to, among other things, the Gaia theory, in which the Earth is an autopoietic system, breathing life into itself, quite literally. With all its good intentions to insert critical and ethical reflexivity into the most fundamental aspects of science, namely empirical observation, it was soon caught up in the radical politics of the 1960s. This made for some exciting scientific, artistic, and political work at the BCL in the early 1970s, much of it summarized in the 1974 publication, The Cybernetics of Cybernetics. If anything marks the end of the cybernetic movement, it is The Cybernetics of Cybernetics. With DARPA and ONR redirecting their funds to the MIT AI lab, the BCL had struggled to find funding for several years. In his final desperate act, von Forster had developed a proposal in 1972 to the Department of Education, which aimed to build a vast electronic online encyclopedia built on top of the Plato network system that had been recently developed by the Coordinated Science Lab at Illinois. While von Forster's fans see this proposal as an early vision of the Internet, it was really something more like a Wikipedia, in which the user could type in any question and get access to the best available knowledge on the subject. Regardless of whether it was truly prescient of the World Wide Web, the proposal was nothing less than visionary and ambitious. It is therefore none too surprising that it failed, even to receive funding for a pilot program. Von Forster announced his retirement and closed the BCL soon after. As its title suggests, The Cybernetics of Cybernetics is a hyper-reflexive work. It recapitulates the great texts of cybernetics, its lectures and pedagogy, and even the student projects of the BCL. But it is more archive than narrative history or textbook, almost a time capsule. A parabook appears in the middle with indices and acknowledgments, and it even includes a detachable metabook with conceptual maps of the various contributors and key terms. Despite its radical structure and intent, the whole book resonates like the death knell for cybernetics, because its history is in some sense completed. There's no nor cybernetics to be done, at least not any that requires the laborious recapitulation necessary to connect to this history. It is both an archaeological memory trace and the end of cybernetic history. The cybernetic mythology did live on, in the sense that discourse in many diverse fields are still being broken down into systems, information, feedback, and networks, all the more so since the advent of the internet and cyberspace. But since 1974, nothing of great significance has been added to the cybernetic corpus. And so I submit that what happened to cybernetics is this: it ate its own tail. Just as second-order cybernetics brought itself into existence autopoetically, it destroyed itself by failing to believe in itself any longer. But it stands ready to rise again from the ashes and be reborn, anywhere, anytime, through autopoetic love or through a cocktail-making robot who begins to question its own existence and motives.
Can you elucidate for me the connection between cybernetics and the rise of so-called artificial intelligence research?
Yes. How long do you want the answer to be?
They say an elevator pitch.
Oh, right. Okay. How many floors?
16.
16 floors. Okay. Not the express, I hope. So what you have in the earliest AI, I guess, you can sort of look at people like Marvin Minsky, Alan Newell, Herbert Simon. They were very, very close to the cyberneticians. They were working in their labs as graduate students. Herbert Simon and Alan Newell were working on von Neumann's machine at Rand Corporation when they wrote their first AI program. Minsky was a student of McCulloch briefly, and his first device was a neural network actually called Pandemonium that he built and that McCulloch thought was great. So they have this, but they were sort of these graduate students beneath these big, great scientists that were the founders of the so-called first-order cybernetics. And they saw, I think, more promise in exploiting the possibilities of digital computation itself rather than really getting at the brain. And if you look at the, let me go back here into this one of these earlier pictures, this one here. So these are let's call them the four founders of cybernetics. Three of them are originally psychiatrists or physiologists. So you have on the, I guess it's your left as well. Ashby and McCulloch are both psychiatrists who start working with electronics. Walter is a, just like cybernetics, waiting to wake up someday. So Walter's a physiologist, and Wiener's a mathematician, right? So you have this very physiological sway that they're really interested in biology and they're really interested in brains at the cybernetics level. But these AI people are much more interested in logic, mathematics, using the digital computer. And if you look at these machines at the BCL, even into the 60s and into the late 60s, they're primarily analog machines, and they're really trying to imitate brains and biology in a much more explicit way to understand how the brain works rather than what becomes AI and cognitive science, which is taking this computational metaphor very seriously in a logical formalism. And that's the sort of the basic distinction conceptually. Now, historically, there's this fissure between them in the 60s over perceptrons. Minsky and Papert criticized the ability of neural networks to do what's basically an exclusive OR in logic, that you can't learn this with a single layer neural network, right? And they demonstrate this in a 200-page book over and over and over again, every different way. And it was, everybody already knew that. It wasn't any big news, but it created a scandal that caught the ear of all the people at the Department of Defense and DARPA and Office of Naval Research. And so they're like, oh, well, neural networks aren't any good. We can't keep investing in them. So they cut off all the funding, and they gave it all to the MIT AI lab that Minsky set up, and he got millions and millions of dollars through the 70s. Eventually, neural networks come back, and by the 90s, they sort of hash out their differences, and now they're all one big happy family again, I guess you'd say. But there's still large differences between what would be called computational neuroscience and what's called AI today, in terms of whether you're trying to model the brain with a computational model or whether you're just trying to build a useful device that uses some sort of intelligence. So that would be the relation. And then you have second-order cybernetics as the kind of counter-response to AI, coming up with a lot of linguistic second-order discussions.
10.000 kopierte CDs vernichten eine Nachwuchsband. Fangen wir an.
Repariert, was euch kaputt macht! Schießt doch, Sloterdijk! Wir zwingen den deutschen Hip-Hop in die Knie! Auf Flexibilität beharren! Veränderungsfähigkeit bewahren! Dienstleistung statt Depression! Mehr Geld fürs Internet! Wir sind das Bauvolk des neuen Subjekts. Hoch die internationale Konnektivität. Politik ist scalable. Zukunft ernten, nachhaltig sehen. Kinder müssen fressen. Giro statt Ghetto. Wir brauchen keine Schüler, sondern Meister.
Zigaretten und wir wissen, gleich fällt der letzte Schuss.
Etwas an seiner körperlichen Deformiertheit ist zutiefst menschlich. Keinen Tag Grauen gegen die Koalition. 100 aufgereifte, gedrängte Schreibmaschinen gegen das Vergessen.
Dark Waver, 16-jährige Dark Waver, wir kommen, um euch zu holen.
Für Heinz aus Wien, eine Macht für John Lennon Biografie, eine Macht für aus einer Mücke einen Elefanten machen, eine Macht für die normative Kraft des Faktors, eine Macht für Massenmedien, die die Würde des Menschen zum Fußabstreifer degradieren, keine Macht für den Psychiater von Brian Wilson, keine Macht für Leute, die Pauschalreisen buchen und sich hinterher beschweren. Keine Macht für den Muff von 1000 Jahren. Keine Macht für SMS-Scheidungen.
keine Macht für Kinderpornografie, es sei denn, sie ist gut gemacht. Keine Macht für Idiosynkrasien, außer sie bringen die Menschheit weiter. Keine Macht für die, die es schon immer gewusst haben.
Gesellschaft ist ein abbehinderter Album.
Jetzt stehen wir da und rauchen die letzte Zigaretten. Und wir wissen, gleich fällt der letzte Schuss.
Etwas an seinem körperlichen Deformierten.
Wir kommen, um euch zu holen!
Für John Lennon Bio. Keine Macht für aus einer Mücke einen Elefanten machen. Keine Macht für die normative Kraft des Faktors. Keine Macht für Massenmedien.
You know, I'm trying to context all this, and because I'm paranoid into, you know, my developing theory of the control society and how we're controlled, and there is, you know, you've heard of Jose Delgado, who conducted experiments in attaching electrodes on various subjects, and he was able to, you know, with the flick of a switch on a little controller, to stop a charging bull in its tracks. I mean, do you have any information about this line of research, which has to do with hardware control of the human, of a brain, or?
Yeah, so there's been quite a bit of work on it. The more successful stuff is the reverse. So using the brain to control hardware has been more successful. A company I worked at for a little while developed a chip that would generate walking motions, and it's a coupled oscillator system. And they were able to sever the spinal cord of a lamprey and insert the chip and restore swimming capacities in the fish. They have now, for amputees, you can basically rewire using nerves in the chest to control an arm actuator, and you can learn to manipulate these. And even for people who are almost completely paralyzed, they can use brain waves and facial nerves, if they have any nerve that functions, use that to control a mouse and a computer and all of this kind of stuff. So the sort of the output side of it is, it's pretty straightforward, because we kind of know where nerves go, and we can, as long as your mind is able to trigger a motor nerve, you can reroute that motor nerve to any kind of system you want. And you can learn to control it, because our brains learn and adapt. Going the other way is trickier. They've done some things with trying to restore sensation. Wiener worked on some things that were trying to help the blind see by actually putting like 300 little pins on their back that would be actuated by a visual pattern, so they could try to see using the nerves on their back, which didn't work very well. but the brain is very adaptive, so I would say potentially you could use lots of different sensory systems. In terms of getting inside the brain and how the brain actually represents the world or concepts or memories, it's completely black box at this point. We have no idea, and we have no ability to manipulate. You can, you know, shock people's brains and stimulate dreams and hallucinations and experiences, and you could map it out for each individual, but it's going to be different for every individual. And it's whether it's a dream, an actual memory, or just a hallucination, is nobody can tell.
So there hasn't been more complicated extensions of Pavlovian type experiments?
Well, there have. I mean, they have, you know, mice that you can drive by remote control, and I mean, there's a lot of strange things they do that are deeply Pavlovian. But nothing we have to worry about in terms of actually controlling your brain yet.
But aren't we really controlled by images and little sound bites, really?
Yeah, I would say in a much more powerful way. And that's how social control works, for the most part, propaganda and controlling ideas and information.
That brings me to my question about, there's a really curious film by Lutz Dombeck, who is an East German filmmaker from Leipzig, who did a film called Das Netz, or The Net, and it links topics like LSD and Ted Kaczynski and computers and the internet in a very unusual way. And he's actually in this film takes a look at the goes back to looking at the Macy conference as something that was basically trying to create a kind of social control mechanism or something. And I wonder if you could talk about that in terms of the way you see the internet developing. Is it something that we should be really paranoid about in terms of how the cybernetics origins and the military agenda with the internet have kind of created a network does quite a good job of creating a kind of a potential social control mechanism more than any, like, more than one yeah. person can really grasp.
No, I have seen this film, and it features an interview with Heinz von Forster at the end, which was not his best interview, perhaps. But I think there's a you can make these paranoid visions, but actually, I would say the internet is probably a much at least has the potential to subvert a lot of propaganda, and I mean I think that's what we're seeing. And you know, the independent media, and even things like YouTube, just adding interactivity, and that's a deeply cybernetic concept. As long as we're just taking orders and we never give back any information, then we're not even cybernetic organisms. We're just material. And the ability to transmit feedback back to the system is the only potential for any kind of political influence. And to the extent that the internet allows two-way communication, it has political possibilities. And I think what you see are institutions and governments that don't want that, doing everything they can to try to put the genie back in the bottle. And there's a lot of talk about regulating the internet and letting basically corporations own all the bandwidth and sell it off so that it becomes a purely economic system. Your ability to speak on the internet will be economically determined. Right now, it's popularity determined. If you have enough hits and you have the servers to support it, you can have the biggest audience that you can obtain. But there's attempts to try to regulate that.
I have both positive and negative perspective on it, but there is sort of, I wonder if you have looked into the sort of panopticon theory, that there's a panopticon effect, that the things that get the most hits are the kinds of things that people feel safe communicating, but if it's not, if it's something really subversive, you really don't put it on the internet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm certainly, I think people are fearful, right? So, I mean, you don't want to put things that are potentially illegal or harmful to you directly that can be related back to you. But the internet also provides the ability to hide your identity. I mean, you know, Al-Qaeda is using the internet to organize itself. Well, one of the early studies done on political action to the internet was actually one of the big cybernetic companies, the RAND Corporation, studied the Zapatistas and revolution in Mexico, and they were highly successful in using the internet to get their message out and to make a global political issue out of it, which actually halted the advance of the Mexican army and suppressing them quite successfully. Of course, then you have organizations like the RAND analyzing how that's possible and then informing governments and institutions how to prevent that from happening. And that's a lot of what you saw in, say, the Republican National Convention in New York, where they used some pretty sophisticated technologies to jam cell phones and this sort of thing, because they were aware that a lot of they would do these speed movements, so that they had all these text networks set up on using SMS and texting messages on cell phones, because they couldn't just put up a web page that said, oh, let's all meet at this plaza and have a demonstration, because the police would know about it instantly, and they had informants working in all these groups. So they had a very closed system where they would just have one or two people know where they were going to meet, and they would send it to a computer network that would relay text messages to all of their members, and so they could, in less than 10 minutes, organize more than 1,000 people into a square and then dissipate very quickly so they couldn't get caught. But so they started using all of these jamming technologies to shut down cell phones all over Manhattan for the conventions. So, I mean, but you have a back and forth. Like, you know, it's whoever's more creative is going to, you know, be supreme with technology. And that's why we need more technology artists.
So, Peter, thank you for your really interesting story of cybernetics. But I was a bit astonished. It was kind of a Hegelian tale of cybernetics, like cybernetics eating its own tail in the 70s, because on the other side you have, as you mentioned, again, research on neural nets. You had artificial life, and now, or not now, but in the 80s, it was no more Marvin Minsky, but Rodney Brooks, who kind of developed biologically inspired robotics, and they often draw on the work, for example, of Gray Walter. So what about that branch? And so is there any connection between contemporary robotics or certain kinds of contemporary robotics and cybernetics?
Well, yes, yes and no. So obviously, yes, because anything robotic is using servo mechanisms, and so even on the narrow view, it can be considered a cybernetic, and of course on the broad view, it's cybernetic. And in the more important sense, they do read the texts, and they see that what they do as being part of that tradition. But what I would say, and then on the negative side as well, they're a domesticated form of cybernetics that... There's still a handful of cybernetics departments floating around that call themselves that. But for the most part, they have to say that they're electrical engineers or computer scientists or roboticists. Nobody has a business card that says, you know, I'm a cybernetician. At least I haven't seen one yet, even at cybernetics conferences. And there still are cybernetics conferences, which are sort of strange, actually. The American Society for Cybernetics is actually having a meeting in February. But they're dominated by second-order cybernetics and a very kind of literary aesthetic approach to these ideas of autopoiesis. And there's no science and there's no machines that really come out of those. That's more performance art and poetry. But they can still be interesting, and they consider themselves cybernetics, but it's not a vital science. It's not getting any research funding. It's not producing new technologies and new theories. It's just repeating the old theories in new ways. And you have Rodney Brooks in these definitely who are pushing science forward, and they're starting from a background of cybernetics, but whether what they do is cybernetic is arguable.
Die Lage der Welt ist trist, auf Schritt und Tritt wirst überwacht. Egal, ob's jetzt off oder online bist, die Freimaurer haben es geschafft. Sekündlich, da fließen die Daten direkt zu die Illuminaten. Sie hocken euch Cookies im Internet-Cache. Jesus, na, ich hab einen Flash. Gerätschaften sehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf. Und wenn sie es ersetzen, weil sie nichts verstehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf. Und irgendwann werden sie es dann kneißen, dass mit Elektronik nichts reißen. Wir wollen die Polizisten zurück, das wäre doch für alle ein Glück.
Mensch braucht seine Freiheit und Leute drauf schauen. Es schaffst du mit keiner Maschine. Und wenn's uns auch dauernd was Neues herbauen, meine Herren, dann machen wir's halt hin. Statt Schaltkreise und Kybernetik bestehen wir auf menschliche Ethik. Ich hab jetzt was gehört von Closed Circuit TV.
Die stecken heraus,
mach was wie!
Wenn wir von Überwachungsgerätschaften sehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf. Und wenn sie es ersetzen, weil sie nichts verstehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf.
Die Beamten, die sollen sich bewegen und nicht nur am Plasmaschirm kleben. Sie sollen hinaus in die frische Luft, befreit aus Kathodenstrahlgruft.
Macht braucht Kontrolle, das weiß doch ein jeder, das steht doch auf jedem Plakat. Es ist 5 vor 12 oder gar noch viel später, schon keimt die gottlose Saat. Gendarmen stehen nur noch im Schatten von giftgrünen Leiterplatten. Ich hab kein Problem, wenn ich wer kontrolliert, Hauptsache uniformiert.
Wohl, wohl!
Überwachungsgerätschaften sehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf.
Links, rechts!
Und wenn sie es ersetzen, weil sie nichts verstehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf.
Beim lustigen Kartenspielen tun sie uns mit Kameras reinschielen. Da kalt ich mir extra einen 40er auf und dann haben sie mir noch einen Trumpf drauf.
Wozu braucht man denn ein Elektronengehirn? Dem kann man doch gar nicht vertrauen. Würmer, Trojaner und garstige Viren, die dann da die Lebenszeit klauen. Bei Atari, PC und Amiga, die Hacker sind immer die Sieger. Sie wollen die Config umkonfigurieren,
aber wir tanzen gleich in die Bier.
Überwachungsgerätschaften sehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf. Und wenn sie es ersetzen, weil sie nichts verstehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf.
In bürokratischen Händen, da werden wir alle verenden. Die Flexibilisierungstendenzen tut eh, die Dame im Nähern so weh.
Wenn bei uns so am Bahnhof ein Radl umfliegt, dann weiß das in Brüssel du zwitt, weil dort das System alle Infos kriegt. Das haben wir von unserem Beitritt. Das Mittel bei Data Retention sind brave und ehrliche Menschen. Die EU ist die neue
CCP.
Aber darüber macht man keinen Schmäh.
Die Beamten, die sitzen halt nur mehr vorm Schirm und die Kriminalität steigt. Die Stritzis, die sind mit der Technik ganz firm und die Politik hat's vergeigt. Fällt uns bloß, dass uns noch ein paar Chips implantieren, wie den armen, 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 armen Tieren. Drum krieg ich als ehrlicher Bürger die Rage und neige zur Sabotage.
Kontenance. Wenn wir von Überwachungsgerätschaften sehen, dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf.
Und wenn sie es ersetzen, weil sie nichts verstehen,
dann haben wir den Holzstecken drauf.
Das lustige Steheckerl brunzen, das wollen sie uns mit Kameras verhunzen.
Schmeidl.
Wir wollen unsere Freiheit zurück. Aug um Aug, Stück um Stück.
Die Gesellschaft ist heute ein Kuddelmuddel. Wir hackeln wie Honigbienen. Doch in diesem Überwachungsstrudel, da sind wir doch alle. alle Rosinen. In mein Mutter tuet sie lauern und ich tu den Download bedauern. Drum mache ich schnell den Taskmanager zu, aber die Firewall gibt trotzdem Karo.
Und jetzt auf kurz die Längslinge wissen es scheinbar genau. Was ist ihnen braun außen grau? Sie schreien es heraus, wurscht ob Mann oder Frau.
Das ist eine Vegasau.
Doch was dieses Gesindel nicht wissen kann, sind die Vorzüge von einem Wachmann. Mir ist doch lieber die Vegasau.
Also Datenmissbrauchs kaum.
Ein Herzl aus guter Statur wie ein Pfau.
Das mag sogar die Herren wie meine Frau.
Genau.